From WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. A lawsuit brought by the ACLU of Maryland on behalf of three inmates and a prisoner's rights organization alleges that juvenile offenders in Maryland sentenced to life with the possibility of parole do not actually have a meaningful opportunity to be released. In the past 24 years, no juvenile lifer has been paroled by the governor. This suit calls the reticence of Maryland's governors to parole juvenile lifers out of line with recent Supreme Court decisions. We speak with Walter Lomax, executive director of the Maryland Restorative Justice Initiative.
What we are seeking is to remove the governor from the process, and that would completely solve the issue.
Juvenile offenders and the fight for parole reform on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. Do juvenile offenders in Maryland sentenced to life with the possibility of parole have a realistic opportunity for release? Early this month, a federal judge heard arguments in this question. The suit was filed last year by the American Civil Liberties Union of Maryland, the ACLU, on behalf of the Maryland Restorative Justice Initiative, an organization that advocates for sentencing reform, and three men serving life sentences for crimes they were convicted of as teens. The three men are now in their 50s. The suit names Governor Larry Hogan and several corrections officials as defendants. The ACLU argues that Maryland denies juvenile lifers a, quote, meaningful and realistic opportunity for release, end quote, and contends the state is so reluctant to grant parole recommendations that life with parole sentences have become de facto life without parole sentences. The Supreme Court has made a series of rulings over the past few years regarding juvenile offenders, ruling that life without the possibility of parole is an unconstitutional sentence for juveniles. Joining me to discuss the lawsuit is Walter Lomax, executive director of the Maryland Restorative Justice Initiative, an organization in Baltimore that advocates for sentencing reforms. Walter Lomax, welcome to On the Record.
Thank you, Sheila. Thank you for inviting me.
I want to make a legal distinction here. The Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services says in the last three administrations, four juvenile lifers have had their sentences commuted, which allowed the parole commission then to parole them. There is one lifer who has been paroled directly by the governor recently, but he was not a juvenile when sentenced. Walter Lomax, governors used to grant parole more frequently. What triggered this new pattern?
In 1993, an individual that was in the work release and family leave programs committed murder, suicide. He killed his girlfriend and then committed suicide. And as a result of that serious tragic incident, all people that were serving parole eligible life sentences was moved back into a higher security, and they remained there until today.
How many prisoners does this suit concern? How many juvenile offenders are serving life sentences in Maryland?
I believe we have somewhere around about 270.
This lawsuit was filed 9 months ago. The hearing this month addressed the state's motion to dismiss the case. What are you hoping to accomplish?
Well, our initial onset was the fact that we know that people do change. And once we began to develop the scientific research on the development of the mind on the juveniles, and then with the recent Supreme Court decisions that was backing that up, then we understood very clearly that these individuals had changed, and as a result of that, they were being denied a meaningful opportunity of release because of the politics that were involved.
But I'm trying to understand, what do you want this lawsuit to accomplish?
What we are hoping to be able to do is to remove politics from the parole process altogether. And let me put this in perspective. The reason why this lawsuit was brought is because no one serving parole eligible life sentences had been paroled. We had been seeking for many, many years to change that policy, and because we were unsuccessful in getting that policy changed, at least to date. And so when we had the Supreme Court cases, we looked at people who was convicted under the felony murder statute and people who were juveniles. Our best case when we partnered with the ACLU to file the lawsuit was to use the juveniles. And let me also put in perspective as to how the Maryland Restorative Justice Initiative became a part of the lawsuit. The ACLU is going to bring the lawsuit for the three people that's actually listed in the lawsuit. But in order to make it a class action lawsuit, they had to have someone that was representing all of the juveniles, and the Maryland Restorative Justice Initiative represents everyone in Maryland's prison system that's serving a parole-eligible life sentences, and specifically those who were juveniles. And so as a result of that, we were able to collect the data that we needed to demonstrate that they were all members of the Maryland Restorative Justice Initiative, and this is how we became a lead plaintiff in the lawsuit.
Is the lawsuit essentially trying to vest the final decision about paroling juvenile lifers with the parole board and take the governor out of it?
The ACLU's position is that these individuals are essentially serving life without parole because no one has been paroled. What we are seeking is to remove the governor from the process, and that would completely solve the issue. One of the things that Judge Ellen Hiller said during her questioning of the state and the ACLU lawyers was that this seems like something that could be resolved legislatively if the legislators were to remove the unfettered authority from the governor. Then these individuals could be paroled because the decision would lie with the parole commission.
And that's something you have sought that the legislature do, but you have not been successful.
To this point, we feel very confident that we may be able to get it done this year.
If you were to win that from the General Assembly, and if Governor Hogan were to sign that legislation, would you drop the lawsuit?
There would be no reason for the lawsuit. That would essentially solve the problem because we are just specifically talking about in the lawsuit about juveniles. But with a change in the policy, then everyone would receive a meaningful opportunity for release because if the parole commission, and they have traditionally been making recommendations for individuals to be released, but they haven't been able to move to the point of the governor signing for them to be released.
Of the cases of juvenile lifers, how many have been recommended for parole by the parole board?
We were unable to specifically get that information because that's privileged through the parole commission. What we've been able to find out from contacting individuals when we were collecting the data to file the lawsuit is that a significant number, and I don't want to cite a particular figure, but we know that some recommendations had been made, but there had been no releases.
So the individual is told when the parole board has recommended
parole.
That's
how we were able to find out the information. But it's not verifiable because, once again, it's privileged through the parole commission and what they would say. The only way we were able to get the information that we were able to get is if they were denied parole. And once they had been denied parole, then they would receive that decision. And until 2011, if they had a recommendation for parole, it could literally sit on the governor's desk ad infinitum. And then once the legislation became effective in 2012, Governor O'Malley denied all the petitions that was before him. And since then, they have ceased to give recommendations for parole. They have been giving recommendations for commutation. And because commutations is not covered under the 180-day statute, there is no time limit on when the governor has to act.
Some of these inmates have been convicted of very serious crimes, including rape and murder. Is the parole commission within its rights to decide not to grant release in some cases?
I would think so. But that's a determination that should be decided based on the facts that's been presented. And there is, I think, maybe 10 different criteria that the parole commission actually considers before they actually will make a recommendation for parole. And that's the circumstances of the crime as well. And so if they decide to award or make a recommendation for parole, then we think that that recommendation should be the final say. And putting this in perspective is that because when an individual received these type of sentences, they're not eligible for parole until after 15 years, in some cases, and 25 years, in other cases. And this gives the parole commission an opportunity to vet their particular set of circumstances over an extended period of time. And so even if an individual was sentenced to, let's just say, a life sentence with parole, and a governor was in office for 8 years, he would have been in office and out of office before he would even have an opportunity to even consider this individual for release. And so it does not allow for the type of vetting that would be necessary to actually, consider a meaningful change whether this individual should be released or not.
Last October, the Maryland Parole Commission, I think in response to this suit, said it would hold hearings over the coming year for nearly 300 inmates who were sentenced to life for crimes they committed as juveniles. Is that not an adequate remedy?
Well, it's a step in the right direction. It's definitely a step in the right direction. In fact, they've also said the Division of Corrections has also amended their policy to allow them to participate in the work release and family leave program. So it's definitely a step in the right direction. And if it were to work as it's outlined to work, that would be great. But even that, it is a protracted and long drawn out process.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Walter Lomax, Executive Director of the Maryland Restorative Justice Initiative, which advocates for sentencing reforms, about a lawsuit alleging that juvenile offenders in Maryland do not have a realistic opportunity to be paroled. You mentioned the three men who were convicted as juveniles who are on whose behalf this lawsuit was filed. Tell us just a bit about them.
Well, I actually only know one of them.
Who is that?
Personally, Mr. Kenneth Tucker.
Tell us about Kenneth Tucker.
Yeah, I met him around 1997 when I was transferred to the Maryland House of Correction. And when I met him, he was the type of an individual that I kind of wondered why was he even in prison, or specifically, why was he still in prison? He's a very industrious young man. He was involved in the educational programs. He was doing positive things within the institution. And I somewhat took him under my wing. I used to edit a magazine called the Conquer Magazine. And he was very, very actively involved in mentoring other young men that was coming inside of the institution. And we used to have extensive conversations. I never got into the details as to why he actually came to prison. But what I was in awe of him is that in spite of all the chaos that was existing in the institution at that time, that this young man stood out amongst a lot of the young people that were there. And since I have been released, I've stayed in contact with him, and I noticed that some men that were in the work release and family leave programs that returned back into higher security, as well as some of those who had been in the system for an extended period of time, some of their behaviors began to change. They began to be more involved in the subculture that exists inside of the institutions. And this young man was never affected by that. And I thought to myself, I said, you know, in spite of all the changes that has taken place, in spite of all the dismal conditions that exist, this young man still continues to strive toward to do good things and the right things. And I'm very highly impressed with that.
That's Walter Lomax, Executive Director of the Maryland Restorative Justice Initiative. His organization and the ACLU of Maryland have brought suit against the state over its parole practices regarding juvenile offenders serving life sentences. I'm Sheila Cass. Quick break here on The Record. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're discussing a lawsuit brought by the ACLU of Maryland on behalf of a prisoner rights group and three named inmates who were juveniles when they were sentenced to life with the possibility of parole. The lawsuit contends that in Maryland, such inmates do not actually have a meaningful opportunity for release. Walter Lomax is with me. He's executive director of the Maryland Restorative Justice Initiative, a party to the suit. Walter, tell us your own story. You spent time in prison.
Yes, yes. I spent close to 40 years, 39 years, just beginning on 40 years, for a crime that I did not commit that was committed back in 1967.
It was a murder charge.
Yes, it was a
murder. You were sentenced to life.
Yes, I was sentenced to life with parole in 1968, following the riots in Baltimore City.
And you were how old?
I had just turned 21.
So you spent 40 years, and then why are you out?
Well, an organization out of New Jersey, Centurion Ministries, that investigate wrongful convictions and innocent cases, they start looking at my case in 1994, and they eventually began to investigate it in 2001. And in 2006, we went to court before Judge Gail Raisin, and she looked at the petition and the evidence that had been collected through their investigation. And I was released in 2006 based on their findings. And at the time, there was no remedy to move forward because the state was challenged the judge's decision. And they offered a deal is that I could be released from the court that day, but they wanted to maintain the conviction. And because my family members had been through a roller coaster, to say the least, during my incarceration, because they all felt that I did not commit the crime. So we accepted the plea agreement, providing that I would not have to plead guilty to the charges, and they accepted that as well. And when I was released in 2006, what I began to do, well, first, the first thing that happened was the legislators, they were so upset that there was no remedy for me to be compensated for the wrongful conviction, they passed legislation called the Actual Innocence Statute. And once they passed, I think it was in 2008 or 2009, maybe it became a law in 2009. But in any event, once that law was passed, I was able to go back to court under a petition of actual innocence. And in 2014, at that time, State's Attorney Greg Bernstein had his integrity unit to investigate the case to find out what their position would be. And fortunately for us, the gentleman who was operating the integrity unit, Mr. Tony Joya, he was able to uncover some evidence that the Centurion Ministries investigators had not uncovered, as well as the attorneys that had submitted this recent petition. And what they found was that I was actually framed by the Baltimore City Police Department. And so they supported the petition. And so I prevailed in front of Judge Peters in 2014 on the petition of actual innocence.
So the charges essentially were dropped?
Yes.
In 2014?
Yes.
That's Walter Lomax, executive director of the Maryland Restorative Justice Initiative, which advocates for sentencing reforms. Here on the record on WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about a lawsuit that says juvenile offenders in Maryland do not have a realistic opportunity to receive parole. You were wrongfully convicted, but you're advocating for people who, in most cases, actually did do the crime.
Yes. It may seem somewhat ironic because most people, specifically my family, felt that I should want to leave the criminal justice system completely alone after that horrible tragedy that had occurred to me. But while I was incarcerated for the 13 years that I was returned back into higher security after the tragic murder-suicide in 1993, and we began to advocate for a change in the policy. And throughout our advocacy, we put together a habeas corpus petition to challenge this change in policy. And what I was able to find in reading and studying a lot of these individuals is that a lot of them really didn't deserve to continue to be incarcerated. I began to, I guess, pay a little more attention to them as individuals, and I realized that even though I was there for something that I did not do, I was still subjected to the same policies and the same procedures that they were subjected to. And I saw them as the human beings that they had actually come to be. And I saw that change in them. And so when I was released, I just felt that that 13 years that I was returned back into the system and got an opportunity to really meet and understand a lot of these individuals, that I simply had to do something.
What have you heard from people who have been incarcerated as juveniles and spent many years behind bars about the parole system?
Let me say this. In 2013, the Maryland Court of Appeals issued a decision called the Unger decision. And that meant that anyone that was tried by a jury prior to 1980 was entitled to a new trial. And since 2013, that decision was issued in 2012, but since 2013, over 166 of those individuals have been released. And these were people that we had advocated on behalf of for many, many years. And they've been released and returned back into society. And now at least 17 of those individuals that have been released under what's called the Unger decision were juveniles, were former juveniles. And since their release, they're doing exactly what we said that they would do once they, if they were to be released. And of those who are juveniles, and looking at their lives, at least four have married. Some are managers, supervisors at their jobs. Some are mentoring, belong to organizations that are mentoring youth. And what they're saying is that they are living examples as to what some of the individuals that are still incarcerated would do were they to be released back into the community. The direct question that you asked me is that what are some of the juveniles actually saying? Well, our advocacy is for everyone that's serving a parole-eligible life sentence, not just specifically for the juveniles. But what I have been able to uncover from my personal self is that because a lot of them, I didn't even know that they were juveniles when I met them when I was incarcerated. I have seen the progress that they've made over time. And so I don't have an answer to your exact question, what did the juveniles say, because I'm talking to everybody when I go inside of the institutions. I had to gather the information, so it took me about a year, close to 18 months, gathering that information. So at that point, I was dealing specifically with the juveniles because I had to make sure that we had, that they were members of the Maryland Restorative Justice Initiative, so I began to deal with them specifically. But I deal with all people that are serving parole-eligible life sentences. But what I have noticed now that the juveniles have been signaled out is that these individuals had availed themselves of all the programs that were available to them. They are leaders in the institutions that they are being housed, and they're not problematic to the system.
Well, let me ask this. As you know, lawyers for families of some of the victims have told the court that your effort involving juvenile lifers, that your effort is causing a lot of pain for the families of those who were murdered. What would you say to them?
Well, I have a great deal of empathy for them because some of the members of the Maryland Restorative Justice Initiative have lost their loved ones to violence in the city, and my family in particular. My young brother was murdered in Baltimore City in 1982, and my family still grieves that tragedy even to the day. One of my grandsons was murdered in Baltimore City in 2006, the year that I was released, just before I was released. They're still very traumatized by that. So from a personal perspective, I know how that feels. I know the type of grieving that actually occurs when a family loses a loved one. And so what I would say to them is that I would have no idea why the individual might have committed the crime that they committed at that time. But I'm not looking at the individual at that point, even though as horrible, as tragic as that may have been. What I'm looking at this individual as they are 20, 30, 40 years after that fact. And I think that at some point, even though that occurred, that there must be and should be some type of forgiveness.
I appreciate you walking us through this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Walter Lomax is executive director of the Maryland Restorative Justice Initiative, a prisoners' rights organization. The organization is part of a lawsuit alleging that Maryland does not offer juveniles sentenced to life with the possibility of parole a realistic opportunity to be released. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.